All right, everyone. Good afternoon and welcome back to In the Corner. I'm Cash here with episode 15. It's Super Bowl Sunday. I'm not a big football guy. This will probably come out right around the same time the game is starting. I'm picking the Chiefs because it's in the script, but let's get into the combat sports talk. We had a big weekend this weekend. UFC 312 was yesterday. Dricus du Plessis retained the UFC middleweight championship over Sean Strickland. Derek Chisora beat Otto Wallin by unanimous decision. We had Zhang Weili. She beat Tatiana Suarez by unanimous decision as well. But, yeah, there's a lot to talk about today. We're going to break down those two cards and the other cards that happened this weekend. Canelo Alvarez is officially going to fight William Skull on May 3rd. We heard a lot about a lot from Turkey, Alshik. And, you know, he made a lot of comments. He did an interview with Mike Coppinger and did some other stuff. So a lot of headlines there, and they've got a lot of other news to get into. So let's just jump right into it. First thing we're going to talk about, biggest event of the weekend, UFC 312. Now, this card, there's no arguing about it. It was just not up to pay-per-view levels. I was hoping that, you know, once it started, because it started with a brilliant, brilliant performance from the Australian debutante, Quillen Salkillo, I think is his name. You know, TKO 19 seconds in over Anshul Jubilee. Fantastic. I was like, okay, we're getting something good here. Jonathan McAuliffe had a good performance. Then we had Rong Zhu, who I'm a new fan of. That was the fight of the night, maybe, aside from maybe, you know, the main and co-main event. But I don't even think the main event was the fight of the night. Maybe Zhang Weili's performance, but Rong Zhu and Cody Steele went to war. I'm a new fan of both of them. It was fantastic. That, like, last minute and a half of round one was some of the best action we've seen in the UFC all year. It was great. I started to get my hopes up thinking, oh, maybe this will be a good card. And it wasn't really. We had in all 12 fights on not just the main card, the whole pay-per-view event, we only had three finishes with Quillen Salkillo, which I mentioned. We had Gabriel Santos finishing Jack Jenkins in round three with a submission. That was a good upset. Actually, I think that he was the favorite, but, you know, Jenkins was the hometown fighter. And then we had Taliesin Teixeira taking care of Justin Taffa very quick. Not a good night for the Australians. That's pretty typical, I feel. You know, whenever UFC goes anywhere international, they bring a lot of the fighters home. A lot of them lose. But it wasn't like an awful card. It just didn't feel like it was up to the level as some of the other, you know, UFC pay-per-views. Main card, Jake Matthews, Francisco Prado was not a good fight. From what I remember being really bored watching that. Jimmy Crute and Rodolfo Bellotto had a pretty good fight, actually. Crute was very crazy in round one, and he got a 10-8 round on all three judges' cards, which ended up getting him a draw. I thought Bellotto definitely won round three, and I think that Crute took round two, but, you know, more of the judges had it going to Bellotto, which I get. So I thought Crute should have won, but I'm not mad at it. Like I said, Taliesin Teixeira with a great first-round TKO finish over Justin Taffa. Zhang Weili looked sensational against Tatiana Suarez. I mean, she was the betting underdog, which I don't really get. I gave Suarez round one, but that was it. I mean, Zhang just took over. She was doing everything. Like, when she was grappling her, when she was striking, just like everything she was just a master at. And I think she has to be pound-for-pound number one. And when I'm looking at, like, who's next in the division, I'm like, there's no fight that really interests me that much. The one that does, and Dana White even said it could happen, because that's about who's pound for pound number one. It's either her or Valentina Shevchenko. He said, well, we may just have to find that out, saying that could be what's next. I wouldn't be mad at that fight at all. You know, it means Zhang moving up, which I'm fine with. You know, I just feel like she's just on another level. She needs to fight somebody who's on the same level as her, and I think that that's Shevchenko. But brilliant performance. She gets a 49-46, 49-46, and 49-45 decision victory. Then we go to the main event, Dricus du Plessis and Sean Strickland. This one was really interesting. It was really similar to the first fight, I thought, where go back 13 months to, I think it was in Toronto, UFC 297. Strickland, you know, is the champion. And I just remember watching that fight, and it wasn't a great fight. It was good because it was competitive, but it wasn't super exciting. Where I just remember, you know, DDP coming in kind of wild and him winning more rounds just based off activity alone. you know, Sean just wasn't doing a lot. And then I remember the fifth round, Sean had a really good, you know, performance. He was like, all right, this is the, you know, this is what we've been waiting for. Get out there, get after him. But it wasn't enough to win the fight. Kind of a controversial decision. Finally, we get back here. DDP has a submission win over Adesanya. Sean has a dominant performance over Paulo Costa. And, you know, we look at this fight. Very close, again, going into it. I picked DDP by decision just because I was like, I don't really know what to think about this fight. I kind of feel like it could be just the same thing. And it was the same thing. Except this time, I thought that Sean was even less active. And that's what everyone's saying is, and I don't understand how he thought he could, what was going through his head. Because when I watched that first DDP fight, I'm like, you know, I mean, Sean could have won that if he just got started earlier. And it's not hard to realize that. You know, you just have to realize, like, okay, look at this fight, like, you know, because he thought he won. I was, you know, if you look at it, it's like, man, I thought I won. What mistakes did I make? Very easy. You didn't do enough. You come into this one, you should have taken control of that cage within the first minute. Immediately, just, like, get forward with your jab and just say, no, I'm taking this. All he did was jab. He's a boring fighter. You know what I mean? It's just so weird how he comes, oh, we're going to go to war. And that doesn't do anything. He did less this time than last time. And I gave DDP every round. I gave him every round. There were some rounds, I think round three, you could have gone either way. That was like a 50-50 round where I thought that Sean, you know, was having more success for most of the round, but DDP had bigger moments. You know, that was where he got the takedown in that round. He had a good kick to the head in that round, I believe. Round four was the best round where DDP just, that was the most easy one. You know, okay, DDP is totally winning this. And that was when he busted Sean's nose, insane nose break, super bloody. It was gnarly. And just beat him up. And it just became of, it wasn't a super exciting fight. And it's weird because I don't even think that DDP had a good performance either. Because Sean didn't do enough, but I didn't think that DDP did as much as he did last time either. You know, and it was true because last time he wasn't the champion. He had more, I have to get in there and beat him. And now he was like, oh, well, I'm the champ, you know? Like, I'm the favorite. I know what to do. And he did know what to do. He won every round. He was less competitive than last time. But I feel like that was more so because Sean didn't do enough. So, disappointing. As for what's next, we talked about Zhang Weili. I hope she'll fight Shevchenko. As for Sean and DDP, I think that DDP will fight Khamzat Chimaev. That's the only option. I can't wait for that fight. Give it to me tomorrow. That is brilliant. Khamzat needs a title shot. You know, DDP is really separating himself from a lot of the guys in the division. I think that is the fight that has to come next, and there's no doubt about that. Hopefully we get that probably around, like, end of summer, early fall, I think, is when we'll get it. As for Sean, I mean, I just kind of thought about it, and I don't know if this is a good idea because Izzy is on a 3-fight losing streak, but I kind of like the rematch now. Just because, you know, I mean, this is now Sean, like, he just, you know, lost to Izzy. Or sorry, excuse me, beat Izzy. He lost to DDP, went back into a number one contender fight with Costa. You know, and then he loses to DDP again, worse. He should fight somebody that's, you know, not in a good spot right now either, and that's Izzy. And that's still a big fight because you can't put Izzy or Strickland not in big fights, especially Izzy. He's a huge star. I think that's a really good fight, you know, to run it back. I think it'd have to be a co-main event on a pay-per-view or a fight night main event because you just have to do 5 rounds for that one. It's too big. I totally understand if UFC doesn't want to do that and they want to give Izzy and maybe even Strickland a lighter touch. You know, I won't mind that at all. But I don't know. I think that this could be a good time for it. That's all I pretty much have to say about the card. Oh, Alexandre Topuria, Ilya's younger brother, fought. He fights just like his brother. He totally dominated Colby Thickness, you know, when it was Thickness's hometown. Like I said, he was the home fighter in Aussie, and I thought Alexandre fought very well. He fights very similar to his brother, just not quite as good, if that makes sense. He wasn't as explosive, wasn't as exciting, you know. I mean, Ilya just has this aura to him, you know. He's a killer, and I think that Alexandre fights very similarly, but isn't quite the same level of as a talent, as a superstar, as his brother. Moving on from UFC 312. Let's talk about Derek Chisora, Otto Wallin. Firstly, I just want to say, if you were following my ex, I was not really loving this card. It took a long time to get a fight that, you know, ended early. It was just a lot of decisions, and they weren't exciting. You know, that's for, like, the big fights on the card. Masood Abdullah lost to Zach Miller. Didn't love that decision just because it was one of those cases where, oh, Miller's, you know, Abdullah's the come forward fighter, but Miller's counterpunching him. He's boxing him off the back foot. And I thought that Miller was doing okay, but and I didn't think that Abdullah was doing very good. I thought Abdullah was totally going to win. And he wasn't as good as he usually was. He definitely wasn't. I'll agree with that. But I also don't think that Miller was this insane, you know, had this insane performance. I mean, I had Abdullah winning 115-113, maybe 114-114. But I ended up thinking that Abdullah probably took that one. It wasn't a good fight. I was bored by it. And maybe that's part of the reason why I didn't see it correctly as the judges did, but I feel like most people thought Abdullah won. My issue with it is that Abdullah may not have been having as much success coming forward, but it wasn't like Miller was outlanding him. He wasn't throwing a lot. And even when he did throw, it didn't seem like he was landing that much. And he was defending pretty well, but still got hit with a good bit. And I don't know. What really upset me is he fights for 12 rounds, barely does anything. It's this boring fight, gets, you know, a hometown decision, and then just starts jumping and dancing all the way around the ring, going crazy. And we're like, dude, where was this energy during the fight? You didn't do anything during the fight. And now you've got all this energy. You're kick dancing and all this stuff. Like what's going on? So that bothers me. I hate it when I see a fighter, you know, who I don't think did enough during the fight, have so much energy afterwards, but whatever. Zach Parker had a terrible performance against Mikhail Diallo. Totally won the fight. 98-92, 98-93, 97-94. But I just thought that he looked awful. He was tired. He he must have fallen down like 10 plus times. Not like collapsed, but just like he gets bumped into, you know, or he just like, you know, just like falls down for a second, you know, just like after an exchange, just kind of like pretends to get pushed. And then at one point literally like grabbed the ref's shoulders to pull himself up. I mean, it was unbelievable. And I was like, dude, this guy's supposed to fight Willie Hutchinson. Hutchinson had to pull out a few days ago with an injury. Willie would have ripped him to shreds. And maybe this is because, you know, Zach Parker knew, oh, I'm way better than this guy. I don't really need to try. But there was an issue with conditioning there where, you know, him against Willie, we know what would have happened now for sure. It was a terrible performance. So I was not having it with this card. Jack Rafferty comes in. He's a very exciting fighter. Finishes Reese McMillan in round 7. Yeah, I really like him. As for what you do with him, I don't know if he's ready for Dalton Smith, Adam Azim type guys. Get him one or two more wins. Then I like to see him. I like to see Smith and Azim fight. I like to see O'Leary and Fernandez fight. We know they're going to fight for the European. Let's say O'Leary gets that. He's with Queensberry. Make O'Leary Rafferty. Absolutely. You know, I think the Rafferty really is getting up there. That's two stoppage wins as a British champion now. Won it last fight out. Defended it successfully this time. He's a good fighter. Nathan Heaney. Oh, my Lord. This guy had a pretty good performance against Denzel Bentley. I don't think it was as good as a lot of people thought back in Manchester about a year and 3 months ago. I think it was in November of 2023. And people thought, oh, it was a flawless performance. I thought it was still a close fight. Then he gets into the fight with Brad Pauls, has a draw. And then they rematch, and Pauls stops him in the 12th round, so now he's no longer undefeated. This is supposed to be his comeback fight. They bring in Sofiane Khaty, who, you know, Frenchman, not big of a name, decent record. I think he was like 13-2 or something like that. You know, this should be a good win for Heaney. And for the first few rounds, it seems like, oh, okay, like Heaney's, you know, doing pretty well here. I think I gave him the first 3 rounds, I want to say. Yeah, I gave him 3 rounds. I gave him the first 3 rounds. And then Khaty started to, you know, do better. And we know Heaney has a really big issue with his conditioning. It's obvious. Every fight he starts to tire as it goes on. And this was no difference. And I think it was in round 4, I started to see. I was like, oh, he's already tired. You know, like already. Again, what has he been doing? You know, because you know that was your issue in the Pauls fights. Get better with your conditioning. It didn't seem like he did. And then Khaty just starts to take more success, starts to, you know, get a few good shots. And then he was really winning these rounds, 4 through 6. Gets into 7 and just brutally knocks down Heaney again for the first time. But, I mean, Heaney is in, again, and he's in a bad spot. And I just remember seeing on his face him just go, man, as he's getting up, like, here I go again. And there's no way. There's no way he's going to recover. He can't. He's done. Gets up. Khaty gets in on him. Goes crazy. Fight ends. And I was just like, wow. Great performance by Khaty. Don't want to take anything away from him. But what is going on with Nathan Heaney, man? is he just getting exposed at like a higher level? Because yeah, I mean, like the Brad Paul's fight, you know, he just got showed that Brad Paul's was the better man. This fight, he and he should have won if he was a former British champion with a win over Denzel Bentley, and he didn't at all. So I don't know. I was just kind of, I'm just shocked. You know, I hate it for him because he seems like a really cool guy. I really like watching him fight, but you have to be better than that. That's two stoppage defeats now, followed by preceded by a draw. When before that, he was undefeated. So he's really going to have to do a big rebuild. They tried to get him in there and do a rebuild, but not too big of one. You know, still in a good fight. I mean, they're going to have to drop back down to like 8 rounders now. Just get his confidence back up or something. Like he's got some serious issues with his conditioning and his defense. So we'll see. All right, let's talk about this main event, y'all. Derek Chisora's last fight in the UK. He's very emotional coming into the arena. If you watched my last episode, I picked Otto Wallin in this fight. I think Chisora is good, but I think he's one-dimensional. I think you can pretty much prepare for Chisora. He's come forward, you know, he just kind of throws his right hand over the top. You know, he's not like this insane. Has he ever been a world champion? I don't think that he has. But, you know, he's not this like, he's a big name. He's very important to the British boxing landscape, and he's a great fighter, but he's beatable. He's lost 13 of his 49 fights. And Wallin has lost to Tyson Fury, which he gave him a tough fight. Had not a good performance against AJ. He got stopped in round 5 in that one. And then you come in here with Chisora, and I thought, well, I mean, he's just going to kind of outbox him, is what I'm thinking. And I'm watching it, and Chisora starts the fight very strong. Very strong. I'm like, oh, okay. Chisora's doing really good. And after like the first like 2 or 3 rounds, I was like, Chisora's going to win this whole thing. Like, he's just fighting tremendously. And I was thinking, I was like, well, Wallin hasn't really gotten started going yet. So we're going to have to see. And then it gets a few more rounds in, and he still hasn't gotten started going at all. And I don't understand what he did to prepare. You know, I think I gave Wallin, I gave him 2 or 3 rounds throughout the fight. You know, which even that is kind of generous. I mean, Chisora looked really good, but it was more so just Wallin looked awful. And I don't know what the problem was, because he hasn't looked that bad before. And it was like he was just letting Chisora fight Chisora's fight. He wasn't trying to, you know, get away from him, and he wasn't trying to throw back. He was just kind of taking the shots. And then what's now being memed, honestly, is round 9, Chisora sent him across the ring. And the screen grab is crazy of Wallin like in an invisible chair at the opposite side of the ring, Chisora in the other corner. I mean, he knocked him down. He hit him hard, and then he stumbled back and then slipped off his feet and just knocked down. It was crazy. Chisora drops him again in round 12. Really good performance. I had it 117-109, as did another judge. One of the judges had it 116-110. One of them had it 114-112. That is a terrible scorecard and needs to be investigated, because if you take away those two knockdowns, that means that they gave Chisora 6 rounds and they gave Wallin 6 rounds. Essentially a draw without the knockdowns, which, unbelievable. I don't see how you can give Wallin more than, you can maybe give him 4, and that's really stretching it. He did not win more than 4 of those rounds. Absolutely not. I couldn't believe that. Doesn't matter, because the right man still won, but, you know, I mean, that guy, you know, you need to maybe suspend him for a little bit or something so you can think about what he's done. Anyways, good fight. It was enjoyable. The question now is, like, what's next for Chisora? You know, he does this whole thing where he pulls out posters of Usyk and Dubois and Joshua and says, who do you want me to fight next? And I get it, because, you know, he had a good fight with Usyk. Usyk's the king of the world right now. Hasn't fought Dubois, who's also a champion, and AJ, who he's, you know, probably, you know, again, one of the guys, biggest names that he hasn't fought. He's fought everyone but AJ and Dubois. And so I get that. I get he wants to go out big and fight for like a world title maybe even, but I don't think that any of those fights are a good idea. I think that Usyk just gives him a horrible night, just in that he won't win a round against Usyk. Dubois will eviscerate him. And to be honest, as will Joshua. You know, maybe not as ferociously as Dubois, but he can't fight with Joshua either. What I like, and this is what's been talked about, the three names really have been Dillian White, Deontay Wilder, Francis Ngannou in Africa. I really like the Ngannou fight just because I want to see Ngannou fight in Africa. There's no one for him to fight in the PFL as of right now. I don't know how much I like that fight for Chisora because Ngannou is a massive, massive puncher, as is Wilder. But we haven't really seen Wilder, you know, do his thing in a couple years. But so I think the Wilder one could actually be very competitive and very good fight. And Ngannou one could be too, because Ngannou is no longer fighting Joshua or Fury. He's fighting Chisora, which he has a chance against. The white one is really good as well. We know Dillian White is about to fight Joe Joyce. Should he win that one, which I think he has a pretty good chance in, we could see him in with Derek Chisora for a trilogy fight. That one you could also do in Africa, but I think I'd prefer the Ngannou and Wilder ones over in Africa. I think Chisora and White makes more sense in the UK just because they're also both British. But good fight nonetheless. I do want to see him go to 50 just because I think he's on like a 3-fight win streak after losing to Fury for the third time. You know, just finish it off. Just get to 50. But you don't want to see him take too much damage, of course. All right, let's talk about some of the other cards this weekend really quick. I'm not going to spend too much time on them. With the GBM show on Friday, it was okay. You know, got some good prospects returning, you know, and fights against guys with awful records. Same old, same old. Shakan Pitters, you know, was, I feel bad for him. He was supposed to fight for the EBU title this week and then ended up in a 6-rounder against a guy with a bad record. Stops him in the second round, you know, so good performance. I think that they were talking about him versus Lerone Richards. I like that. We know that Pitters is going to fight for the European title next. I think they said they're going to announce something for April this week. By the way, GBM also mentioned that they're going to do a stadium show in May. I would love to see it. I think they're going moving up in the world, but like a stadium show? It must be a small one. And they also said there will be a world title on. I have to assume that's like a female world title because I don't know who they have that they could do a world title, get in a world title fight besides Shaquille Thompson, but that won't be it. And even Shaquille Thompson, I don't think that should be. I just know that he was in discussions for the Janibek fight. Speaking of Shaquille Thompson, he's in the main event. He gets a 4th-round stoppage, I believe it was, over David Benitez. You know, similar thing. He's supposed to fight a better opponent. They're also supposed to have a women's British title fight on this card. A lot of it just fell apart, but they're still able to put it on. Good performance from him. They get him to face off with Jerome Warburton at the end of the fight. I like that. That sounds fun. I think that's what you should do next. So, good card. That's all I really have to say. BKFC was in Newcastle. This was not my favorite BKFC card. They're usually really exciting. I don't think that this one was. I tallied it up. They had 13 fights. 7 of them went the distance, which normally you'd say, oh, whatever. Like, that's normal. That's fine. That's good. Not for BKFC. Not for my liking. When there's 13 fights, usually like 9 or 10 of them don't go the distance. It just felt kind of funny because my main issue with British prospects is that they don't have killer instinct. And I mean, we're going to talk about this top tier show in a second, which is dreadful. But I don't like watching, you know, these British prospects just go and throw a few punches against these punching bags. And BKFC is more evenly matched, but still, I just thought that it was a lot of 50-45s in there. And I never like seeing a 50-45. But unless it's like a brilliant performance, you know, like Zhang Weili. It wasn't 50-45, but she was great. DDP and Strickland wasn't as great. Anyways, none of the fights were that exciting except for the main event, Carl Thompson and Rob Boardman. Both dropped each other in the first round, and it ended there with Thompson coming out on top to claim the Cruiserweight UK title, which is pretty funny to me. But I thought that was a really exciting round and fight. My main thing with it is that they did 13 fights in 4 hours. Brilliant. Love that. Love that pacing. We need to keep that going for other sports. Pro Box had a card. Ramon Cardenas versus Brian Acosta. I actually did enjoy this one. I was kind of watching it in the background just because I was locked in on UFC more so, but Rihanna Rios looks like a very good prospect. What else was on that card? Figo Ramirez had a pretty good win, but he was in there with Jose Lopez, who doesn't have a good record, and he gave him some issues, so do that what you may. Michael Angeletti had a really good third-round body shot over Judy Flores in the third round, like I already said, but yeah, that was really cool. It was a slow start. You know, wasn't that exciting. And then just timed it perfectly and put him out. Shavkat Rakhimov losing to Justin Powder. That was a big upset. And, I mean, he just got dominated and destroyed over what ended up being 8 rounds. He was knocked out in the 8th round. I mean, Paldo was beating him up real good. He dropped him in the 1st round. He just Rakimov had no success. Eighth round, lands an insane combination, insane shot on him, and just puts Rakimov not out, but totally out of it. Thrown against the ropes and just on the floor, like the ref's counting, and he has no idea what planet he's on. And, you know, corner throws in the towel, and he stays sitting there for like 5-10 minutes. It was scary. But great performance from Justin Paldo. He definitely just kind of announced himself to the lightweight division. I want to see him back on Pro Box soon against another good opponent. I thought it was a great performance. Main event, we had Ramon Cardenas winning a unanimous decision, I believe it was, over Brian Acosta. It was a pretty good fight, from what I remember. Cardenas was dropped in the seventh round, which was pretty surprising. I thought that he had been really winning most, if not all the rounds, not all, but a lot of the rounds up until that point. Acosta kind of took over from that point on more so ended up being a little bit closer than it was. So I liked it. It was a fun fight. Cardenas maybe didn't look as sensational as he was supposed to, just because, you know, he got dropped and it was a little bit closer than we were anticipating, but he's still a top 10 guy at 122 pounds. He may be in the top 10 of all of like the whole division, you know, not just like one sanction, but I know he's pretty high with the WBA, I believe. You know, once these titles all clear up, when Inoue moves up, he's one of those guys that can definitely get his shot. And then today with the top tier card, this was absolutely dreadful, y'all. I do not like watching a ton of British prospects go the distance. And this wasn't every fight. But, I mean, you know, Thomas Asamba opened up the card, which was really weird, by the way. He was the European champion. He just lost it to Charlie Edwards. Went 12 good competitive rounds with him in September. Now he's opening up a small hall show on a Sunday in the afternoon in a four-rounder against a guy with 30 losses to zero wins. And I know that Asamba's not really that big of a name or a fantastic fighter. He's 14-9 himself, but still, I was just kind of surprised. Like, oh, wow, like he's quite a fall from grace. Reminded me of Callum Smith's fight. I know that was a warm-up fight, but still, in November, that was odd. You know, I wasn't really too impressed with most of the guys on this card. Harvey Smith had a good second round TKO finish over Louis Smithson. That was good. Everybody else bored me. What was it? Kevin Revell and Rissard Luvisky had a technical draw after a cut in the third round. But that fight was actually getting quite good. Louis Pichetti was upset by Martin Svark and kind of robbed as well. I didn't think that Svark won that. I don't think that Pichetti looked good. I thought he looked pretty bad, but I thought he still won. And then Tom Welland in the main event with a fifth round stoppage. I did really like that one. I'm a big fan of his. I think he's a great fighter. Hopefully, we know that he's going to come back out March 7th on the Harlem Eubank Tyrone McKenna undercard. So excited to see him perform once again there. But you know, he did well. This was a step up for him in a way. This was his, you know, first main event, and I thought he did really well. So not the best show. It went like 4.5 hours with 8 fights, which none of them went past like 6 rounds. You know, all the ones that were scheduled for 6 rounds pretty much did, but main event was the only one scheduled for longer, which was only 8, and it went 5. So, you know, I didn't love how slow it moved. I thought they could have cut out some of the in-between filler. Like with cards like that, just keep them going. Keep them going, you know, which this did not. So, yeah, it was whatever. Okay, so last week's episodes were all focused on all the Canelo stuff, you know, with the Crawford fight being on, then the Jake Paul fight being on, then the Crawford fight being off, and then Jake Paul fight being more so on, then it being off, then the Crawford fight being on again with all these other fights in Saudi Arabia. So just where that's developed, it was announced the other day that by His Excellency that Canelo will be facing William Scull for the undisputed super middleweight titles in Riyadh on May 3rd. That will be it'll be on primetime here in the States. So they're going to do it on Sunday morning so that everyone can watch it, you know, live on Saturday night in the United States, which I'm excited for. I think that that's cool. Usually they still go late anyways when they're trying to match the British European markets. So it's interesting. We know that the plans were Bruno Saras and Jermall Charlo. Really happy they chose William Scull over them, because that would have been bad. Just no interest in that. I do have interest in the William Scull fight. Not the actual fight, but just Canelo getting the belt back so that he can be undisputed again. So, you know, and that's a good warm-up fight. There's no really a lot of danger in Scull. You know, get in there, hopefully get a stoppage win to boost your confidence even more. He hasn't gotten one of those in a while. And then head into Terrence Crawford in September for undisputed. Jake Paul and MVP clapped back to Canelo. They had a statement talking about, essentially they're pissed because they got used as pawns, and they don't think that Canelo was. They don't think that Canelo is professional. They think that he's ducking, which he is not. And they do not think, they think that, you know, other guys like Turki Alsheikh and Eddie Hearn tried to get involved in it and stuff and pull them out because they're money hungry. I'm like, yeah, you may be right that they're money hungry. And, you know, they just wanted Canelo for themselves. But, you know, I mean, I think that it was kind of messed up what Canelo did and using Jake, but it was also smart negotiation tactics with another potential, you know, with another promotion. I think that this is, I don't know. Let me say this, and you can't even argue with me. Canelo versus Jake Paul is more interesting than Canelo versus William Scull. Not in the fact that, oh, no, that's a more competitive fight, but which one would you rather watch? Which one is going to bring more eyeballs? Which one's going to be a bigger event? Which one's going to be more exciting, more interesting? Definitely Canelo versus Jake as opposed to Canelo versus William Scull, which is just another contender, you know. I mean, yeah, he's a champion, but he's not really going to do anything to Canelo. Not saying that Jake would, but Jake would make it exciting. It'd be, you know, a huge event. Canelo would have to come up and wait. He would be the smaller man, but that's really the only disadvantage. I mean, I would have much rather seen it. You know, Jake Paul is obviously very upset, and he put out, like, I think it was actually a confidentiality agreement instead of a fight agreement, so he may have just gotten himself in some legal trouble, but I'm not sure. Yeah, anyways, Canelo will be fighting William Scull May 3rd, which I'm okay with. Turki Alsheikh has a lot of comments this week about a lot of different stuff. I'll just run through them. He said he's now putting out misinformation, which is a little bit, you know, questionable. Actually, I should say it's disinformation because he's putting out, you know, stuff that isn't true. I can't remember what the right word to use is, but he's putting out stuff that isn't quite true to try and, you know, push an agenda, which I have an issue with this because he's now the owner of the Ring magazine, which is a, you know, it's a newspaper, it's a magazine, it's journalism, and that is very, very unethical to be putting out fake stories. I mean, you're going to lose the magazine, their whole credibility, if you, just because you own it, you say, okay, let's put out a Ring magazine headline saying, oh, the Ring has learned that Canelo is not fighting Terrence Crawford. And that's not true. You can't do that. That's illegal, even, to put out fake stories. So, I really do not like that stance from Turki. I think it's kind of funny. If it was just him saying that stuff, it's one thing, but the Ring magazine saying it is another. He says he wants to put Inoue Nakatani on for Riyadh in December. Listen, I love that he's excited for that fight and he wants that fight, but that's one that needs to happen in Japan. And I would like it at 122 before Inoue moves up to 126, but that one needs to happen in the Tokyo Dome, not the Kingdom Arena. He also mentioned unique locations, specifically Alcatraz, saying that they're working on that. He also said the Eiffel Tower, the Mexican Pyramids, Colosseum in Rome. I mean, this is really interesting stuff, y'all. I would love to see how this looks. He also mentioned like a mountain, I think. I mean, it'd be cool, but I also feel like it'd be kind of weird. Like, what are you going to put there? Because you don't want to put an actual big fight. You don't want to put Ryan Garcia versus Devin Haney in the, you know, on Alcatraz where 200 people can watch it. You know, like, because the reason that they don't do sporting events at cool locations is because you need to have an audience there. And a boxing is a small, you know, ring. It's not like a big football field, so you can put it in a lot of places. Like they did Santa Monica Pier, that was great. But you know, to do these crazy locations, I think you'd want to put more money into it. But also you don't want to put a name there that sells tickets. And I feel like kind of the part of the excitement of it would be lost with no crowd. So it'd be cool, but I don't know how logistical it is. If Bivol wins, he wants a trilogy. He wants to do Biturbiev, or Bivol would be Bivol Biturbiev 3. I don't hate that, just because, you know, it would be 1-1. It depends on how Bivol wins, but I think it is kind of messed up. If not messed up, but it doesn't seem fully like the right thing to do. If, say, Biturbiev beats Bivol the first time like he did, then Bivol wins, and then it's like, all right, Bivol, you know, you got your rematch, you can move off. Because usually that's what happens with, you know, when a guy, when the champion loses to the challenger, they do a rematch, the champion gets it, and then it's 1-1, but then they just go off because they were supposed to win the first one anyways, and they're just correcting their wrong. But Turby and Bivol aren't like that. It's 50-50. So when they're one apiece, you have to go for a third time. And I kind of hate that for David Benavidez because I think he needs to get it. And this is why part of me wants Beterbiev to win just so that we can get to Beterbiev Benavidez. Because even if Bivol wins and there isn't a trilogy, it'd then be Bivol Benavidez, which is good. But Beterbiev Benavidez is what I want to see. I mean, my lord, like, just think about that. It'd be, that's honestly maybe the new best fight to make in the sport. He also said, you know, oh, he wants to put Jake Paul on a fight. Let's do Jake Paul versus Mr. Beast for the Disney YouTube Championship. I think it's funny. The thing is with him is that he's saying, like, oh, Jake Paul's not a real fighter. It's all circus. What he did with Mike Tyson. You tried to bring Vladimir Klitschko, who's 48 years old, and I know that's younger than Mike Tyson, but still too old to be fighting. And instead of putting him in there with Jake Paul, who is a Disney YouTuber, whatever, you wanted to put him in with Tyson Fury or Alexander Usyk or Daniel Dubois, one of those guys. I mean, you wanted to put him in with an active world champion. Like, that is, no, that's a terrible idea. And I mean, you know, he did Tyson Fury versus Francis Ngannou, which was Ngannou's professional debut against an active world champion, which I know, we say that as if before the fight happened, when the fight did happen, it was spectacular and Ngannou was competitive and maybe even won the fight, but just from an idea point of view, you know, saying Jake Paul versus Canelo is a circus, even though it is, you've also done circuses and want to do more circuses. So, you know, practice what you preach. He also said he wants Shakur versus Tank, but Tank doesn't want that. He's right. He's right. I'm glad that he wants to see it. I don't know if Tank is afraid, per se, but Tank just doesn't want to take harder fights when he can take easy ones and still make a lot of money. But whatever. He also said he wants to see Canelo versus Benavidez. Which is great. If he can pay Canelo the money to take the Benavidez fight, then thank God. Thank you. Because we need that so bad. And I don't know if it'll ever happen again just because Benavidez has gone up in weight and is never going to come back to 168. But, that fight needs to happen. It should have happened a year or two ago, but it still needs to happen. I mean, just like his schedule he's working on, it's ridiculous. We have February 22nd, biggest card of all time. April 26th will be Eubank Ben. I think May 2nd will be the Garcia and Haney card. May 3rd will be Canelo and Skull. So we're going to have potentially two pay-per-view events from Turki Alışık in 2 days, which is unbelievable. I'd rather they put Ryan Garcia and Devin Haney a little bit later in the month, but we'll see. Then we've got mentioned the Teofimo Lopez Richardson Hitchens fight will be probably like June time, which I don't know if that's going to be one of his cards, but you know, he's talked about it, so I think it may. Then I believe, you know, we'll have October will be another big opening real season card, and December will be Inoue. He wants to put in November, I think, is when he mentioned doing Usyk versus the winner of Dubois and Parker, I think he said. And he also said he wants to do a card in July or August. I think I have all those wrong. Right. And then October, by the way, is where we'd also see Opetai Azurdo. So I think there's a chance we're going to get like one card from him a month, which is awesome. Very exciting. Very excited to see, you know, just what the future holds. I mean, he's got almost all the big names now on his roster. So it's getting really, really interesting. Okay, that's enough about Turki Alışık. Let's get into some other big headlines. We'll try and run through them. Dustin Poirier wants his UFC retirement fight to be in Louisiana, New Orleans. We know this. He's saying it's in the works and that the UFC are trying to make that on pay-per-view. Now, he's a big name. He could totally do a pay-per-view. Say you do against Max Holloway, and I think that's actually the right fight to do because you do him and Max Holloway, it can be for the BMF belt because, you know, we know UFC, they like to do the title fight for pay-per-views. And Holloway versus Poirier is definitely a pay-per-view headliner, I think. And you get to do it for the BMF title. So I say you do that this summer in New Orleans. Jarrett Hurd versus Johan Gonzalez will headline the PBC prelims for Tank versus Roach on March 1st in Brooklyn. I like that. I think that's a pretty good fight. Hurd should win. I think that's a good fighter to put as your main event for those prelims. We're hearing that Dillian White, Joe Joyce, and Lawrence Okoli, Richard Riakpor will be on April 5th for the first Queensberry DAZN show. And I think that I've also heard that Moses Atauma and Charles Martin is going to be on that card, as will David Adelay versus someone else, but I can't remember. I mean, dude, what a card. All heavyweight card. That gets announced tomorrow. They're going to do a Queensberry DAZN press conference. They're going to announce that. They're going to announce Lee Wood versus Anthony Kakache on May 10th in Nottingham. And I believe they may announce another card or two, smaller ones. I hope they announce at least three. But I'd be fine if they just announced these two, because, wow, we're getting some cards from Queensberry on DAZN. Galalia 5 versus Francisco Rodriguez Jr. Is potentially going to be in April, possibly on the 19th was the date being discussed. Not sure if that's still the case. But, you know, good that Galal's going to return pretty soon. Fantastic performance over Sonny Edwards. He's now the WBC interim champion. Rodriguez is the WBC mandatory's number one. So this is a really good fight for him. It's a tough fight. World title implications from this fight. I think that he should fight the winner of Kenshiro Taraji versus Sergio Yuri Akui. You know, they fight March 13th. Winner of that will be unified with the WBA and the WBC. Winner of Yafai Rodriguez, I should say, will be mandatory for that fight, which I think will be Yafai. That'd be a brilliant fight. I'd love to see it. UFC 315 has been confirmed for May 10th in Montreal. This is pretty cool. You know, not really much to say. They also confirmed 314 will be Miami April 12th. We already knew that. So, you know, it's cool they're going back to Montreal. I believe they haven't been there in 10 years. As for main event, I'm not sure what it would be. I think it wouldn't be a big fight. You know, we know that 314 is looking like it'll be Ilya versus probably Volk. And then Pantoja versus Cara France. So, I mean, if I just think about what that main event could be, I think that we have... let me think. So 125 is Pantoja. It won't be him. 135, it won't be Marab. It won't be Ilya. It won't be Islam. Oh, it's probably Bilal versus Shavkat. I think that's what it'd have to be. Because it also wouldn't be DDP. He just fought. It won't be Pereira because he's going to fight 313. And then it won't be John Jones, Tom Aspinall, because there's no way you're going to do that in Montreal. I think it's going to be Bilal versus Shavkat, which, hey, I'm totally down for. Pro Box announced their March 22nd card, headlined by Lester Martinez, Joshon James. We knew this was going to happen. Don't love that it's on a Saturday, but right now it actually looks like there won't be any competition from them for them. You know, with the Matchroom card in Sydney will be in the morning. UFC London will be during the day. I haven't heard of any other boxing or MMA cards being announced for March 22nd, but yeah, it's a good card. Vladimir Hernandez is in the co-main event against Isaias Lucero. So that is a, you know, good to see that he's returning. They say that he's undefeated, but then on his record it says he's 19-2, so I don't really know. But regardless, you know, he's a really exciting fighter. Then on the, we also get Jasmine Artiga versus Regina Chavez for the WBA World Super Flyweight Championship. So, hey, I mean, like, that's a really good card. Martinez James is a great fight at 168. Vlad Hernandez, very good fighter. Seems like he'll be in a tough fight, and then a women's world championship. So no complaints for me. We know they're also planning a card in Washington, D.C. in April featuring Gary Antonio Russell and some other names. That's pretty cool. I know they did one in June with Lamont Roach headlining where he had the first defense of his WBA 130-pound title. I'm guessing this will be at the same place. There's a small arena they had there. Yeah, I love that Pro Box is moving around the country and stuff. And this one will be in San Bernardino, California. Yeah, love that. You know, we talked about BKFC having their show in Newcastle on Saturday. They also announced three events on that day, which was pretty crazy. I feel that they don't really announce a lot of cards during, like, their big cards. They do during the small ones, which doesn't make a ton of sense to me. Like, Knucklemania, I fully expected them to make some kind of announcement there. They didn't. They made them on this card, though. March 27th, they'll be back at the Hard Rock Casino in Hollywood, Florida. It will be Luis Palomino. You know, he's about to get a title shot again at the lightweight championship. He's in there with Davis. I can't find his first name, but that should be a pretty good fight. Palomino's good. I don't know a ton about BKFC, so I'm hoping this will be good. The Hollywood cards I know are usually pretty big, so excited for that. Then they're in Manchester 2 days later. 2 days later for BKFC Manchester. Like I said, it'll be March 29th. Chip Chase versus Fox for the Featherweight UK title. With Colin versus Kosicki in the co-main event, it'll be a middleweight fight. You know, pretty cool. This is going to be at the Planet Ice, which is the same place that they'll have the Matchroom Next Gen show with Pat Brown. Actually, the day before, so that should be interesting. I'm just now realizing that they're right, you know, next to each other, but that's also in the same city as KSI Dylan Danis. It'll be the same day in the same city. So really interesting they're doing that the same weekend as another card. I know that BKFC is like UK shows and some of their other ones don't really operate as, you know, as the same thing as like the main main promotion back home. You know, same with like the Prospect Series. It's kind of like its own like subdivision. So, you know, we'll see what happens there. But yeah, it's interesting that we're going to have two bare knuckle cards in 1 week. So it should be exciting. The big one will be BKFC Italy. We knew this was happening in April 26th. It's now been announced. Chris Camozzi versus Lorenzo Hunt 2 for the Cruiserweight Championship. Great fight. You know, Hunt was two division champion. I think he was light heavyweight, cruiserweight, and then went up to heavyweight to challenge Mick Torrell at Knucklemania last year. Broke his arm immediately in the fight. So he lost, of course, but, you know, wasn't a bad loss. Going back down to cruiserweight to get the title makes sense. This should be good in Italy as well. There'll be a press conference for that with McGregor present on February 16th, which is is next Sunday, week from today, actually. Yeah, so some good stuff coming from the BKFC. Loving how their growth. WBC rankings. Errol Spence was removed for the super welterweight division, which is interesting. We know that he turned down the Sebastian Fundora fight last minute. He pulled out of the negotiations. You know, so I understand why, in a way, that he may not have the mandatory position anymore, but I'm also kind of curious, is he not? Like, are they saying, like, all right, yeah, we're not even going to deal with you? Or, like, you know, in the way that WBO does, if you turn down a title shot, you get pulled out of the picture. It could be like that, or it could be that, you know, like, he's not really going to fight anymore, which is so weird because, I mean, he lost to Crawford, and it was a bad loss, but he had never lost before that. And now he hasn't fought in what's going to be 2 years, so it's really odd that what's going on with Spence. I have no idea where to go from here. Devin Haney is now ranked number one at 147 pounds. I'm not mad at that at all. I still think Devin Haney's a fantastic fighter. I mean, him and Ryan are about to fight for their first welterweight fights, and then they'll fight each other. I kind of think that you have to put them at 1 and 2 in the division already, probably over Boots, just because I kind of think that either of them beat Boots right now. So yeah, I'm not really sure, but, you know, he's ranked number one with the WBC, you know, could fight Barrios for the title, but we also know that there's going to be a lot of fights before he can, you know, planned ahead with Turkey, which I don't know if I love Turkey planning like three, four fights in advance, but it's what's going to happen. Andy Ruiz called out Jake Paul. Yeah, that's not going to happen. I know that Jake Paul went up to heavyweight for the Mike Tyson fight, but he went up to like 225, 230 pounds. Andy Ruiz is over 300 pounds. That's too much of a difference. I know it's heavyweight, but Jake's not really a heavyweight. Yeah, no interest. And Andy Ruiz is a lot better than him, too. You know, the interest with the Canelo fight is because they're both huge names. Andy Ruiz isn't as big of a name. He's still a big name, but not Canelo level. And Canelo is the good fighter coming up in weight. Jake's already at a disadvantage by being, you know, not good of a fighter. You put him in as the, you know, the way lighter fighter by 80 pounds as opposed to, you know, like 30 pounds. You know, it's kind of, you know, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Jermall Charlo versus Caleb Plant. That's what needs to happen, y'all. That is what needs to happen. There is a lot of hate there. It's a good fight. Caleb Plant wants big fights. Jermall Charlo needs to come back. He gets a WBA interim title if he wins that one. Please make that fight. It just makes so much sense in the world. Tommy Fury versus Matt Floyd on March 29th on the KSI Danis card, which would be nuts if he fought on their undercard. I mean, he beat KSI. Now he'd be his co-main event, which is pretty funny. But I don't really know who Matt Floyd is. Matt Floyd just posted a poster of them saying, oh, yeah, if we like, it was a long thing, so I didn't read it, but apparently he said if Tommy Fury accepts the fight. So I don't know if it's actually going to happen, but I think it's definitely been negotiated. So it's not official yet, but who knows? It could end up being official. I don't really care too much about Tommy Fury right now. I'd like him to fight a name similar to Darren Till, not Matt Floyd, but whatever. It would be cool if he was on that card as well, because, you know, you could build a rematch and you can just have them all on the same table. It'd be pretty exciting. Brandon Moreno versus Steve Urseg will headline UFC Mexico City March 29th. Love that. Urseg was supposed to fight March 15th, I believe it was. No, March 1st on the Apex show then. I think it'd be 103. Some stuff happened. There were like two flyweight ranked fights on that card, and somebody pulled out, I'm pretty sure. So then they all got kind of shifted around. So he's no longer on that card, I guess. He's now going to move to this one against Moreno. I love Steve Urseg, but potentially he could lose for a third time in a row, which would suck. But I also like Brandon Moreno. I think that's a really good fight at 125 pounds. So, and it's a good headliner for that card as well, so I'm excited. And the last thing we'll talk about, Edgar Berlanga. We know that they were planning a March 8th show in Puerto Rico for his return fight. We're now hearing he's going to fight March 15th in the Creed Royale on the Emma Williams card. Now, they did have an opponent. I can't remember what his name was, but he was undefeated. You know, probably a good opponent for Berlanga to come back against, undefeated, and, you know, beat him and look good. And, I mean, he had his fight before Canelo at the Creed Royale. It's a good venue, especially for him because, you know, Puerto Rico is an Orlando area. But I don't know. It would just be kind of weird for him to return on that card. I feel like he'd have to be main event. Like, seriously, I think you'd have to push down Ammo Williams because there's no way you have Ammo in the main event of Berlanga and the co-main. Or even possibly even before Omari Jones because he's from Orlando and they're really trying to hype him up as the co-main event. So, and they're even treating him like the main event, it seems, over Ammo. So I don't really know what's going to go on with Berlanga in March. I don't know why the March 8th Puerto Rico date is no longer happening, but I'm sure we'll get an announcement in the next couple days as to what's actually happening. That's all. I only did it in like under an hour, which I'm really surprised by. There was a lot to talk about. I tried to move fast. Hopefully I didn't move too fast. Thank you so much for listening. I'll probably post another episode on Tuesday, I think. Yeah, that's pretty much all that there's been going on. There's been a lot of stuff. Let me know if you have any comments or advice or anything like that, suggestions. Follow me on X, you know, if you're listening on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, whatever. Thank you. Have a good rest of your day. Thanks for listening. Bye.